I don't know if you're aware of this. There's a little bit of stress around these parts these days. You know, when you you're on the outside looking in, everybody tends to be a little bit grumpy and cranky.
It's exciting.
Oh yeah, it is.
Okay,
it is.
So
it
don't accentuate the negative. It's stress. It's exciting. It's entertaining. It's good fun.
It is good fun. Last year you were here, and I thought this was kind of cool. You and I talked about a couple of things that just kind of out of the blue. I asked you a question about, you know, where you saw, you know, the NHL yourself in terms of the stewardship of the game. And you said that, you know, you felt you were, you know, one of the stewards of the game. And then this past fall, I believe it was in September, you along with the NHLPA and I believe 15 other groups launched a Declaration of Principles for Hockey.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It is for those of us involved in the running of hockey, so to speak, the creation at all levels, creating an environment where participants can participate.
Right.
We articulate a common set of values that are, we think, special for our game, whether it's teamwork, hard work, physical fitness, getting an education, inclusiveness. And these are values that all of these hockey organizations subscribe to. These are principles that we think can make a difference in people's lives, which is important. And underlying all of it, hockey, whether or not you're a player or a parent, hockey and involvement in hockey should be fun. It should be a good, positive experience.
So how do we take, in your eyes, what's the implementation? Where do these get in?
Well, we have a variety of programs, again, that make a difference in people's lives, whether or not it's Hockey is for Everyone or Try Hockey or even Hockey Fights Cancer or our environmental programs. But again, to have an approach where all the hockey governing bodies are focusing on the strengths and best attributes of the game and emphasizing that to young people is going to help grow the game, because it's not about growing hockey fans. Mm-hmm. It's about making a difference in people's lives.
So the NHL's role in pushing this forward, how do you see that? Do you check in? Is this something that is...
Well, we hold periodic meetings and conferences, and we interact with the other groups. Obviously, we took a leadership role in setting forth this framework and then bringing everybody together and getting to a common understanding. We took a leadership role.
Who took the leadership role for you? Was this Pat LaFontaine?
Pat LaFontaine, Jessica Berman.
Okay.
They are the ones who labored in the trenches and made this a reality.
Response, have you gotten?
Overwhelmingly positive.
Okay.
I mean, what's not good about it? We're taking a great sport that has great athletes in it, particularly at our level, and using it to instill the right values in young people.
I think there's some really interesting parts of it that present some really interesting, some challenges at the grassroots level. One in particular about participation in multiple sports. I don't have to probably tell you about one of the conversations we're having at the youth level about early specialization. I thought that was a particularly important one.
Because it's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be an ordeal or a chore. We want to make hockey enjoyable for the young participants. And that means we don't want them burning out at a young age.
The women's game.
Yes.
We currently are watching two competing leagues, but
yes,
we have leagues now, and they're starting to get paid. What's your observation? What's your thoughts on where the women's game is going,
Gary? I think there probably isn't enough talent for two leagues right now.
Okay.
And I think that having two leagues makes it more difficult for us to get involved. If there were no leagues, we'd probably start one under the NHL umbrella. And I've told both leagues that, but I have no interest in competing with the existing leagues. I think that would be counterproductive. And if they can make it work, then, you know, all power to them. But I think, you know, women's hockey needs to get stronger, particularly if there's going to be a meaningful pro league, and fragmentation doesn't help in that pursuit. But there are two leagues. They have investors. They have people running them. They have terrific women players, and they're going to have to sort this out. We're supportive in a variety of levels, whether or not it was letting the two leagues square off against each other at one of our outdoor games. Mm-hmm. It's whether or not we provide some modest financial assistance. But again, I think it would be better for women's hockey if it were centralized and unified. But I'm not going to push that. At some point, if the two leagues are interested in coming under the umbrella together and letting us do it, because I don't want to take ownership over it unless I can take ownership over it. And
yeah.
I don't mean that from an economic standpoint. I mean that from a control standpoint in building it. But I wish both leagues success. We talk to them regularly, and maybe their model will work.
And they know where you stand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
you're there. The other thing we talked about last year that I thought was interesting was I asked you about esports.
You have a very good memory.
I have so little in this world, but that I have. the one thing that really I appreciated the fact when we talked about it, you let the cat out of the bag that you were way down that road.
Yeah.
That at the time, if I remember correctly, you said that the problem you had as a league was that the technology wasn't where you needed it to be.
We're going to at some point announce an esports framework, mm-hmm. with some tournaments using the hockey game. We're not interested in forming our own esports league using some other game. To the extent we can use esports to build more interest and greater connectivity of our fans to our game using the hockey game, that's what we're going to do. Ultimately, I'd love to see a multiplayer game where each team has a tournament and you get to represent your favorite team, and
right.
we have an each sport cup.
Right.
We're, from a technology standpoint, we're not there, but there are things in the not-too-distant future we anticipate unveiling where we have some competitive esports, again, in the hockey context.
I think the reason for that question last year was around this time that the NBA had announced their 2K league, and I think at that time you said you didn't want to do what they're doing, right? You have a different vision.
You'll see when we're ready to announce it, but
okay.
Yes, we're working on that.
So you are ready to announce it, it's going to come this year, or is it still in the...
It's in the formative stages. My hope is we will be announcing something before the end of the regular season.
Where do you see... You spend a lot of time in conferences and you know, listening to the smart minds in sport. Where do you see it fitting, Gary? Is it complementary? Is it...
I view it as complementary because
okay.
we're going to use a hockey game for hockey fans or would-be hockey fans who want to learn the game. The independent leagues, which are using a one-off game, mm-hmm. single player... we'll see what that holds. It seems to be popular among Gen Zs.
Yep.
And maybe this is a function of age. I respect what they're doing. I respect the interest that's being demonstrated. But I'm not sure I get, and maybe this is my age, watching somebody else play a video game.
Do you think in your tenure you'll ever get to a point where you're dealing with them in the same space? I mean, you've got some television contracts and broadcast contracts coming up. I mean, there's always the dipping of the toe by, you know, over the air into esports. But do you think that they'll be in the same marketplace that you, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL, currently occupy?
Around the edges.
Around the edges?
Yeah, I do. Because what'll be interesting to me is, you know, will there be 50 and 60-year-old esporters and esport fans? Or do you grow out of it? And I'm not suggesting you do. I don't know. And it's a little too early to tell.
Yeah, it's a burgeoning market, right, in that regard. Virtual reality. I was one of these people that thought virtual reality was only limited to the game component. But again, and I hate to harp back to one league, but the NBA's talked about it as a kind of a fan enhancement.
Fan enhancement, officiating enhancement is a tool for officiating. These are all things that all the leagues are working on.
Yeah.
I tend to restrain our announcements until we're ready to actually do something as opposed to, you know, talking about it, but everybody will do their own thing.
So let me try to change this conversation just slightly, because, again, when I'm listening to it, I think video games, video games, video games. And then I hear somebody say, what if you could take your best friend who lives across the country and the two of you could sit
courtside next to each other and have the
and
same
interact, right?
Yeah, and not be there. Although I still think as much as AI and VR will be around, I think there's nothing like being at our game.
Right, right. But again, complimentary.
Well, but you know what? There was, you know, for a while, everybody was getting excited about 3D TV. And then the, and
yes,
then
they were.
And then they concluded nobody wants to wear a headset for 2.5 or 3 hours to watch a movie or a game. We'll have to see how virtual reality unfolds, because currently you've got to wear a fairly sizable headset.
For the record, I was at the Madison Square Garden
unveil
with the Islanders and the Rangers of 3D.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to me.
It was just fascinating.
Just fascinating on watching the game in that format.
But, you know,
unwieldy.
A little unwieldy.
to say the least.
But technology will evolve. And so in all of these questions, and they're great questions, we are very mindful, spending a lot of time and energy and money making sure we understand all of the new developments in technology and seeing how applicable they may or may not be to our game. Because the one thing about everything we do has to start with the game. It has to be exciting, mm-hmm. skillful, competitive, and entertaining. And everything else, and the authenticity of our game is part of what makes it great. Yes, embracing technology is a wonderful thing, but it's got to be done in the right way, and it's not a panacea.
He's Gary Bettman, Commissioner of the National Hockey League, our guest here in the Basement Systems Hot Stove Lounge. It only seems like a couple of years ago we were talking about, I don't know if you've heard about these advanced statistics and you know, all of these things that everybody seems to be talking about on the internet. Can you just talk about the NHL and the technology that's coming in that regard in terms of analytics?
The analytics, I find, at least to my taste, and again, I don't think this is old school. I think they're good benchmarks, but I'm not sure that's how you make all your personnel decisions. I think particularly in our sport, chemistry, what goes on in the room, mm-hmm. how players interact, how they have each other's back, that's kind of hard to analyze statistically. But in terms of, you know, how a player may or may not perform in given situations, it may be helpful. But I don't believe you can ever play these games instead of on the ice by an algorithm and determine a winner. Having said that, you can use data to bring people closer to the game. Mm-hmm. There may be things that they're interested in. You know, we've digitized every score sheet from every game going back to the beginning of our league over 100 years ago. No league has done that. And you can go back through the technology we have available, SAP is our partner, and figure out whatever it is that interests you. And we think that's fun and exciting.
Yep.
We're also working on player and puck tracking, which is something we've been working on a number of years. I mean, people can think back to the Fox puck.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting experiment at the time. It was before its time. It was still primitive, although it did lead to the first and 10 line that they use in the insertion in football. We believe that there's technology out there that will enable us to track the puck and track the players, but we haven't been able to scale it in 31 arenas in 1,271 regular season games. And that's something we're working on, and we think maybe possible, maybe next season's playoffs, maybe the following season. And whether you want to know how far apart players are when certain plays develop, mm-hmm. how much they've skated, how fast they're going, what the puck is doing, how far it's traveled, these are things that can either enhance a broadcast or give fans perhaps a second screen experience, depending on what your interest is. What technology can enable us to do is let people, fans, who want to customize their experience one way or the other, the ability to do it. And there won't be anything wrong with, and you'll have the ability to sit in your living room with a big screen TV, sit back and take it all in and have a passive, other than rooting, experience.
Yeah.
So it will continue to evolve, and we'll continue to make sure that we understand what's going on, and to the extent it's appropriate and positive, we'll avail ourselves of it.
And, you know, maybe it's privileged information, but you did talk today about a special puck that's being designed.
Yes.
That'll be the kind of cornerstone for this, right?
Well, cornerstone essential to make it work.
Yeah.
In the days of the Fox Track puck, we had to take a puck, cut it in half, dig out the insides, put in the technology, and glue it back together. And that wasn't so good. We will have a puck that can actually perform exactly as our current puck does, but enable us to equip it with technology in a way that would be seamless.
A question that 5 years ago would have sounded like I was joking, but I'm not. Are we getting closer to a smart net?
Well, if you can track the puck and know precisely where it is within a tenth of a millimeter, you're getting closer to a smart puck.
Yeah, okay. So you wouldn't need that. You would all be right there.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Bettman is the commissioner of the National Hockey League, kind enough to join us here in the Basement Systems Hot Stove Lounge. About a year ago, I was asking you a bunch of questions about Vegas and their expansion draft. And boy,
you were cynical.
I was cynical.
You were skeptical.
This team won't win 10 games. That's what I think I said.
It didn't win 10 games.
Oh, sure didn't. How does it feel to be the commissioner about the league with the most successful, and we can say that, the most successful expansion team
ever.
Ever.
In any sport. Well, but you know, what happened, there are a few things that are going on in Las Vegas, and for anybody who's actually been to a game there, they will tell you it is an incredible experience. The crowd is knowledgeable, enthusiastic. It's a real show, what you would expect in Las Vegas. When you have the player system we have with the salary cap and revenue sharing, and all of our teams can afford to be competitive, mm-hmm. and it's really subject now to team building as to how successful you are, you couldn't admit an expansion team that wasn't going to be competitive, because everybody should be able to be competitive. Yes, some teams will perform better than others, but over time, everybody should be competitive. Secondly, if you think back to our expansions when teams were less well equipped, you would see an initial enthusiasm in a new market 2-3 years. If there was chronic losing, some of that enthusiasm would diminish. Mm-hmm. And then 8, 9, 10 years after the start, the team would finally make the playoffs, and people who hadn't had the playoff experience, which is spectacular in our sport, would finally get it, and the fan base would build back up, and here we go.
Yeah.
The notion was we weren't going to go through that. You get a team that's playing meaningful games into March. This team's going to play meaningful games into March. Now, the draft was a little deeper, and I also believe, and some people may disagree with me or think it's just silliness of me to say this, but I think there's something else going on with this group of players. Yes, Gerard Gallant and George McPhee have done a great job, but the fact that this team came together and bonded with the city at the start in the face of a horrific tragedy, I think these players, as part of the healing and the coming together, are playing for a higher cause than perhaps you typically see in the regular season. And I think they're playing for Las Vegas in ways that an expansion team may never have done before. And that may be part of the success.
I respect the fact that Seattle is a process and that it's, you know, not the 32nd franchise of the National Hockey League at this point. But I want to ask you a question that I asked somebody from Seattle yesterday. Do you think that the success that Vegas is having this year is being felt in Seattle with just the success that they've had in the last 24 hours? Because could that give a little more jam?
You know, typically in media coverage of sports, you look for a solution after 60 minutes of play. What's the one answer I think there has been interest, longstanding interest for hockey and the possibility of NHL hockey for years in Seattle.
Agreed.
And the ticket drive is the culmination of finally getting arrangements to renovate Key Arena, basically build a new arena.
Right.
The fact that we did expand and it's been a positive experience in Las Vegas is, yes, certainly one of the factors, but I think that enthusiasm would have been there anyway.
No, and I don't want to connect the two. I just wonder what influence it would have. And you bring up the media. I can't help but think that, you know, in a market that is not necessarily an NHL market, the fact that Vegas is having some success would probably draw attention from the media a little bit, that they go, well, this doesn't look like every other expansion team that we've ever seen. Maybe it'll be different when it comes to Seattle.
Well, but look at Nashville now. Look at Columbus now.
Now.
Well, but so we streamlined the process.
Yeah. No. You did good. I think you did great. I'm just saying that in Seattle, I look and I go, geez, I wonder if I live in Seattle, I'm looking at Vegas going, man, this isn't a bad deal.
But Seattle hasn't had an NHL team. They lost their NBA team.
Yeah.
I think the people in Seattle wanted a winter arena sport. And I think based on the fact that there's lots of hockey in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
The possibility of a rivalry geographically with Vancouver. Yeah. I think people are excited about that in and of itself.
How do you and I always seem to argue over compliments?
We're not arguing.
I'm just saying.
I thought we're having a discussion.
We're having a discussion.
And by the way,
if we're
having a discussion and I say something and you go, yes, you're right, and you say something and I go, yes, you're right, we're going to have a fairly boring conversation.
I agree with that. Any reason to think that if a 32nd franchise is allowed into the National Hockey League, that the rules will be any different or
no? I'm sure
similar.
Based on what we're charging and what Vegas got, I have no doubt that the seller would the purchaser would expect the same expansion rules, and I think the clubs. Existing clubs understand that.
What about, I'll ask specifically about Quebec City, who went through the process with Vegas, who came to came up to the front with you when Vegas was announced, and you know, are they still, I don't want to use in queue, but are they still in mind?
They're in mind, but there are practicalities to the situation, whether it's the ability to put another team in the East right now, the state of the Canadian dollar and the cost of a franchise. These are all factors that mean this is not the appropriate time. But we are aware of the fact that there's tremendous interest in the NHL in Quebec City.
Gary Bettman, Commissioner of the National Hockey League. I know we've kind of got to wrap it up here, so just a couple to end with you. Video replay. Only if you don't have to go, I don't have to go. I'm just trying to keep you on schedule. That's
no,
all.
No,
you're
no,
looking
I'm,
at your watch.
I mean, I, when you
said lots of time,
no,
Rob. Don't
no,
think.
No. The reason I looked at it is it seems like I just sat down. This has gone so quickly.
Well, thank you.
I thought you were pushing me out
I'm not
after 5 minutes.
Out.
No. So I looked at my watch. I'm going, we're done already?
No,
I can't believe we've been on the air for a half hour.
You have your entourage here. I don't have jerky for them. I feel bad. All of these things.
What happened to your jerky sponsor?
Well, it'll come back. Video replay. I want to ask you this question first, and then we'll get into goaltender interference and offsides. Could in any scenario, could a league like yours turn around and go, you know what, it's not working out. We're just going to go back to human error. Could you do that?
I think once you jump off the cliff,
you gotta
continue. You can't go back.
Okay.
But what we have to do is make the refinements that make it work. Okay. So, for example, maybe I'm anticipating your question.
No, you are.
Okay.
Yeah.
On offsides, it was being used too frequently.
Yeah.
And we said, wait a minute, it's a fairly, other than the issue of control, which it generally isn't what gets reviewed, this should be a pretty straightforward call. The coaches are challenging too much. Let's only make it for the bona fide calls. You get a 2-minute penalty now if you challenge and you're incorrect. And guess what? The number of challenges basically went in half. So after approximately, give or take, 900 games, we've had somewhere in the 40s in terms of challenges for offsides. Goaltender interference, a little more complicated because unlike offsides, which should be black and white, goaltender interference is a judgment call. NFL's had a problem with the judgment call on pass catches. The intention of using goaltender interference was basically to correct egregious errors. What I mean by egregious is you're the goaltender, and I get called for goaltender interference, and if you look at the video, I never touched you. Okay? Or the contrary, when the puck goes in, the officials rule good goal, and they didn't see the fact that I actually grabbed your stick. Okay? That's what it was for. What it wound up being, because it got overanalyzed by the officials and by perhaps the Situation Room, is searching for perfection. How much contact was the contact incidental? And that's not what it was intended for, because that's the judgment call. And in fact, at one point when we were doing a review, I said, if this is taking 4 minutes, it should never take 4 minutes, because it meant the call on the right ice was probably right. It shouldn't be this hard to analyze it. So we're going to work with the managers at the GM meeting in March, and we're going to see if we can refine this in a way that makes it easier to use. Because you can't, especially when there's a rooting interest, you can't give certainty on a judgment call. Now, what's made it worse, and I'll talk to the managers and the coaches about this, is so you're a coach, you challenge, and the call goes against you, and your response is, I don't know what the rule is for goaltender interference. Well, the rule's been the rule for almost 20 years, and we haven't changed the standard.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like a bit of a self-inflicted wound, and we'll straighten that out.
Want to ask you a little bit about a question that was asked upstairs. Not necessarily the specifics. I'm more interested in the topic itself, Gary. With sport kind of going the way it is, there's a lot of talk about health and safety concussions. Are we ever going to get to a point, you think, where everybody can come together and have a conversation? Because it seems adversarial on both sides.
We're having conversations on a regular basis, and we're having conversations with the governing bodies that deal with hockey throughout the world. Yeah. We've been very proactive. Mm. We're trying to make the game safer when it comes to diagnosis and return to play decisions and detecting concussions. We've been on the cutting edge, and we evolve as the medicine and the science tells us, because it's still an evolving field in terms of understanding cause, effect, healing from concussions, and long-term effects to the extent there are any. And again, we think this is important, and while probably not everybody knows everything we're doing, mm-hmm. and probably we don't get the credit we deserve for all the things we're doing, I'm okay with that, because it's about the substance. It's not about whether or not, you know, we're out there issuing press releases about how wonderful our efforts are. We're trying to do the right things.
Could that result one day in rule changes? I know Ken Dryden wrote a book, and he had two suggestions for the league. Everybody's got an opinion.
Everybody has an opinion.
Yeah. Could it result? Could we see rule changes down the road?
If we thought rule changes would be appropriate, we would change it. We haven't hesitated to do that. We've changed the rules many times as it relates to how the game is played and how injuries may or may not occur. So we've done what we think is consistent with what the science is.
You were asked a question with the season ticket holders today, and it's funny because you talk about us, and we've done this for a long time. One of the first visits we ever had, you and I had this great conversation about fighting and where it fit in the game. It was just terrific. It's going away, and you were asked about that today, and your answer to me is very interesting. Why is fighting going away from the game, Gary?
I think the competitiveness of the game. The threat of fighting is still there, which keeps players honest, but the fact is, because our games are so competitive, teams on their own, we haven't changed the rules, are choosing to go with skill and speed as opposed to perhaps one-dimensional players.
We have gone this long, and I have not asked you about the building. I know I read your quotes yesterday. I know you're not here to meet with anybody. This is not an update on the building or anything. No. Do you have anything?
There's nothing going on. The Flames have concluded that there's no reason for them to pursue a new arena because they don't think it's possible, and it would be a fruitless exercise as it has been. And so they're going to continue to do the best they can here in the league's oldest building, the best of their ability.
Judge today handing down a decision here in Calgary that about Dennis Weidman and his lawsuit against the Flames, the league, and Don Henderson's lawsuit against Dennis Weidman, the Flames, and the league. Can you comment on that and the decision at all?
I haven't read it. Okay. Other than as we contended, jurisdiction resided with the league and the league's arbitrator, which I assume is me. But again, I haven't read the decision yet because it came down within the last hour or so, I think.
Last one for you. I've been thinking about this a lot. Where is North American professional sports going? Where do you see your league? Where do you see the professional sports in 30 years from now?
I believe that our game will continue to grow. More participants, more fans. Can't be much more in person because we played at 95% of capacity, but more people will connect with the game through all sorts of media. We will continue to work to encourage the growth of the game on a worldwide basis, particularly in places that don't have a strong hockey background now. And in those countries that do, we want to continue to work with them to continue the development of world-class hockey players, because the best hockey players in the world come to play in the NHL, and we'll continue to embrace technology, which A, makes the world a little smaller, and B, gives fans an increasing opportunity to get the type of experience they want connecting with their favorite game.
What's the media going to look like in 30 years?
Well, media is going to continue involved. Nothing is as important to media as live events, live sports. That's good for us and the other sports leagues. And, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you had a handful of broadcast networks and outlets, and that was an analog TV. And then we got cable and satellite, and then we got HDTV, and now there's streaming. And the social platforms and the other streaming platforms, whether it's Amazon, Facebook, Apple, you name it, they're going to, I believe, ultimately get into the live sports business in terms of how they deliver content to fans as well. So it's going to be an interesting mix, and it's going to continue to evolve. Who would have thought, for example, 10 years ago, that you could watch almost any NHL game wherever you were on your phone?
No, that's why I asked the question.
Yeah, and
because I don't know where it's going.
But it's great as far, you know, we've given you the ability to get more of our sport than ever before, and we're going to continue to use technology to do that.
But does it displace the live event?
No. Nothing's better in person than an NHL game in terms of a sporting event. That's why our buildings are basically full.
Yeah.
Playoffs, regular season, and so, you know, everything, and you and I discussed this 40 minutes ago, everything we do starts with the game. And technology, marketing, promotion, you name it, doesn't matter if the game isn't healthy and entertaining and fun to watch.
Thank you. I always enjoy these conversations. You've been really good to me. Before we go, I do want to recognize that guy, though.
That guy being Frank Brown, sitting on my left.
Yeah,
we'll recognize him.
He's retiring.
He's retiring after a distinguished career as the hockey writer, principal hockey columnist for the Daily News. He left that side of the business and came to us 18 years ago, something like that. Yeah, and he's decided that his advanced age is, even though he's the same age I am, is requiring him to retire. And I told him when he told me that, and I meant this not to make him feel guilty, but to make him feel good, he's made my life very difficult by making that decision. We're going to miss him, but we're never going to let him go far. We're going to keep an eye on him.
Well, remember, very distinguished career as the goalie for the media team, Al Morganti's team.
That was not the distinguished part of his career.
Oh,
I've seen him play, and he is awful.
Well, I say this, and I mean this sincerely. There's only one person that in this business that I can call and get a response from immediately, and it's Frank.
So
every time it's Frank.
So we should. Frank Brown is the name.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if somebody wasn't listening closely, they wouldn't have gotten it, and Frank deserves all the accolades that he's getting on his retirement.
But you're not retiring. You're just past 25.
Somebody asked me, would I still be doing this in another 25 years?
Yeah.
That would make me 90. I'm not going to be doing that. If I'm on the face of the earth, I guarantee you I won't be doing this at 90. But there's a wide gap between 65 and 90 that we can play with.
Well, technology, you never know.
Yeah, that's
right?
Okay. That's
the
okay.
The bionic commissioner. There we go. As always, thank you for doing this. Enjoy the rest of your time. Are you from here to Annapolis now? Are you going to the outdoor game?
I'm going to, after the game tonight, assuming the roads are passable and the airport is open, I'm going to fly east so we can get ready for tomorrow night's game, although we're having wind issues there that we're going to have to deal with. I'm told the winds should be calm by tomorrow night, but we'll see.
Thanks, Gear.
Thank you.